The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, a leading oncologist has warned that public patients are being denied powerful new cancer drugs, which could keep them alive for longer, or in some cases cure them, while these same drugs are available to people who have health insurance. The oncologist in question, Dr. Michael McCarthy, is a cancer specialist in Galway University Hospital, and he has long campaigned to end this inequity, and he's now among a number of senior specialists who are supporting a letter to Health Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill proposing what's called a co-funded early access programme. And Dr. Michael McCarthy joins me now. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and thank you for asking me on.
Now, it's something we didn't necessarily know much about, that there is this inequality. Will you tell us in what particular specialist areas it arises?
Well, it arises in every cancer type. And as far as I can see, the inequity is on track to get much worse before it could get better if something is done about it. But I guess at the core of my job on a day-to-day basis, I see people who have cancer now, and it's my responsibility to give them advice as to which treatments are likely to work best. Now, I'm definitely not the best oncologist in the country, but I've spent 20 years training to make these types of decisions. And increasingly, because the pace of change in terms of research is accelerating, the options that I would recommend are not open to me and my colleagues across the country.
I mean, we hear about these new drugs, and we were talking to Dr. John Crown recently about, you know, translational medicine, which is getting the stuff out of the lab and onto the market and into the patient. And the discoveries, as you say, are coming thick and fast, and they're quite profound in terms of the impact they can have. But no drug can be offered to any patient, public or private, until it gets the nod that it's safe to use in the market. So is it the case then that there are people getting drugs that are safe in the market, but others who are being denied?
That's the case. So the process is that there is clinical research that is conducted to demonstrate effectiveness and safety objectively. The people who conduct the research, we're talking about pharmaceutical companies, can apply to European regulators, the European Medicines Agency, for what we call marketing authorization. And their approval gives a certain amount of confidence that the drug is safe and effective. It isn't, in my opinion, the case that every drug that is approved for marketing authorization by the EMA should be available, because in some cases the benefit is marginal. But there are cases where the benefit is large and substantial and obvious. And for these drugs that the EMA have approved, they are currently available to patients treated in private hospitals and not available to patients treated in public hospitals.
Now, the question of the insurers, are they happy to cover all of these drugs, or is it, people with money can afford to pay for them?
It's a very good question. So I personally don't work in a private hospital, but my understanding from talking to colleagues is that the insurance companies are living up to their public promises to reimburse these drugs. In terms of self-paying for drugs, with the GoFundMe campaigns or personal access to resources, it is also clear that this is not a possible route to access the drugs in a public hospital, but people can self-pay in private hospitals. I guess the catch there is that if somebody is self-paying without insurance, it's not just the cost of the drug that has to be covered, it's the cost of the full hospital care, which is a lot of money.
You can't be kind of semi-public, semi-private under the current regime.
No, and it's clear, and the HSE have made this very clear in the past year, that self-paying in public hospitals is not an option. That's clear.
And yet they are still admitting private patients to public beds and taking the money from the insurance companies.
I'm not fully up to speed with the status of that situation, but I do know that as a consultant on a public-only contract, I don't take any payment for delivering care to patients in public hospitals, whether or not they have insurance.
All right. Now, talk to me about the kind of advances that have delivered drugs that are not available to the public patient. You know, are there some examples of a particular drug that you know works?
So I think the last time I spoke to you, maybe about a year ago, from memory, there were about six treatment indications that were available privately and not publicly. Now that's up in my area of practice. That's up to about 12. To give you an example, there's an immunotherapy called dostarlimab that is available for the treatment of a subtype of endometrial cancers. And the difference that's proven in clinical research at 2 years is that about 60% of people who get the treatment are still alive and well without any progression of their cancer, compared to 15% of people who didn't get the immunotherapy and got chemotherapy instead. And these types of results are coming thick and fast. And I think unless we have a reimbursement process, which is very important, until we have a reimbursement process that can act quickly to make decisions on these drugs as they emerge, I think the gap in terms of ability to access these treatments between public and private is likely to grow over time.
So to borrow a phrase therapy delayed is effectively for many people therapy denied.
It is, because if a new immunotherapy, let's say, or a new high cost drug is approved tomorrow by the EMA, for people who have cancer now, if you have insurance, you will be able to access that drug immediately in a private hospital. But in the public system, 50% of those EMA approvals reach a reimbursement decision, but that decision is delayed by 2 to 3 years in my experience, but the other 50% never reach a reimbursement decision at all. And this is the gap.
Now, the Department of Health does acknowledge that this is an issue, but they say that €158 million has been allocated for new drugs since 2021, and steps have been taken to hire more staff, and adding application tracking have helped to speed up the HSE assessments. But you have a proposal that might work. It's called a co-funded proposal. Now, who are the co-funders?
I guess this is an attempt to get the public healthcare system to combine forces with pharmaceutical companies who develop these new drugs, which have researched to demonstrate that they're effective and also have approval for that treatment indication by the European Medicines Agency, to come together to allow patients in the public system to access drugs that meet this threshold faster, while the reimbursement process is taking place in the background. And I guess that if that might help, anything that might help to get access to these drugs sooner is a good idea from my perspective.
So the idea being that the drug company, let's propose it was a 50-50 arrangement, that currently the government pays them nothing and the patient can't afford to pay them anything. And okay, if it's a private patient, there might be an insurance payment. But currently, let's suppose it's a public patient, they get nothing, the government pays them nothing. However, if they did this co-funding arrangement with the government, they get half the price of the drug. And as we know, the drugs to manufacture are only a tiny fraction of the actual total cost of the drug, because they're trying to retrieve their research investment, their trials and so on. That's part of the price that's built in. But in terms of the marginal cost, if the government pays them half what they're looking for, they'd be selling more drugs.
Exactly. Now, I guess there's the in terms of again, thinking about the access to patients for drugs that are considered effective, I think it seems to me to be a win-win situation. And, the reimbursement process can continue to happen. And if it turns out that the reimbursement process eventually declines to offer reimbursement for public patients, then we can act on that basis. But it does allow for patients to get drugs
in a timely fashion.
In the meantime, at the moment, what happens is that for some companies, for some of these drugs, they offer what we call an expanded access program, while the reimbursement process is going ahead, and that means that the company supplies the drugs free of charge to patients who meet the criteria, to patients in public hospitals, But it's only some companies that do that. And I think if we could establish a more broader set of criteria that would apply to more of these effective drugs through, let's say, co-funding, mm-hmm. I think that would be helpful.
All right. And the final question about all of this is about the cost-benefit analysis. I mean, at what is the threshold for saying that this drug should be more widely available? I mean, it's difficult. You're playing with people's lives when you say, well, if 20% get a value, we don't give the drugs. If 40% get the value, we do give the drugs.
This is a very difficult question, and I certainly don't have all the answers. And I do know that there are lots of people working in for the HSE and working with the NCPE who wrestle with this question every day of the week, and they need our support. But at the moment, there is a cost per quality of life year saved threshold that weighs strongly in the reimbursement decision. But from my perspective, seeing people who have cancer, my only consideration in some sense is the drug likely to be more effective than the alternative that is available to me to prescribe? And increasingly, the answer is yes, there is a better alternative, but no, I can't get access to it.
A couple of comments coming in. The public service gets the yellow pack treatment in every section of the health service, not only in cancer, says one texter. And you might have a comment on this, which comes from Mick in Limerick. Hi, Pat. The government should invest in PET scanners in Limerick, Galway and Waterford University hospitals. My wife recently had a malignant tumour confirmed and will have to wait a month to have a PET scan in Cork. They need to do a PET scan before a course of chemotherapy can be prescribed. How can they call the cancer centres in UHL, in UHG and UHW centres of excellence when they have to rely on either trips to Cork or Dublin to get PET scans? We live in Limerick and there will be a PET scanner in the newly opened Bon Secours Hospital. However, it's not operational yet. There is one in Galway Clinic, but again, a long waiting list. It only adds to the angst of a cancer diagnosis. Treatment will be bad enough, but having to wait to have it started is harrowing. That's from Mick.
I agree completely. I think he's absolutely right, and that the in terms of access to PET scanners, there's a wide range of issues that capacity could be improved to get patients on the right treatment faster. And I definitely can see where Mick is coming from, and I agree with him fully. Mm.
Dr. Michael McCarthy, consultant oncologist, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.